This episode of Outspoken is brought to you by Modibodi, the period underwear that gives you better support, better protection, and a better life. This is Outspoken, the podcast that's not afraid to say exactly what you're thinking. Our names are Amy, Kate, and Sophie Torber. We're identical triplets, but we often don't have identical opinions, so sometimes things can get heated. Outspoken covers all things reality TV, influencers, entertainment, and issues facing women.
That is so fetch.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for our special episode all about periods. Now, I've been so excited to talk about this all day, and it seems like you guys are really excited to hear about it because we had such a good response on our Facebook and Instagram when we told you guys about this episode.
I think it's the most responded to question we've put up. We had so many great questions.
I know, I was really excited to see the questions trickling in because a lot of them echoed the questions I have for Maria. So I can't wait to hear her get into the topic a little bit more.
Well, we will be joined by Maria Harper shortly, and she's from Natural Health Medicine. She's a qualified nutritionist and naturopath, so she'll be able to give some great insight to some of your questions. But we thought we'd start by talking about our own sort of first time periods because we really want to break the stigma, because it's crazy. We were all discussing earlier that when we all first got our periods, it was such an embarrassing topic to talk about.
No one spoke about it. Even though you knew everyone at school was going through the same thing, it was this weird thing where like all your mums knew you had your period and they would talk about it. But there is no way I would have said anything to my best friend about it.
But at the same time, I think while it was somewhat embarrassing, part of you also wanted to get your period to feel like part of the group as well. Because
really?
I know, well, for the three of us, obviously we're triplets. And I'm actually the youngest, only by a few minutes out of all of us. And Kate and Amy both happened to get their period before me. And I did feel a bit left out, or that I wasn't at the same milestone as everyone else. Like, so there was a little bit of relief for me when I did get my period.
I can tell you from being the one that seems to always go through this stuff first. So I was the first one to get my period.
Well, you're the older sister, technically.
Yes, but it was such a shock because even though we did sex ed and all that sort of stuff and Mum tried to have the awkward chats with us, when I got it, didn't even know what was happening. So I think some OG listeners will know about my story, which I think is quite an epic first period story. But for those who don't know, we were going on our first overseas holiday and we were 11 years old. So we were so excited. We jumped on a Malaysian Airlines flight and, you know, the flight was great. I think we were a few hours into the flight. They'd served our meal, had dessert, and I decided to get up to go to the toilet.
I joined you, remember? Because we went together because I think we were a bit scared using the aeroplane toilets.
I'm still scared to use those toilets.
So anyway, we were sitting in a line of five in the middle row because we've got five members in our family. And I got up and I think Mum's like, what's that on your pants? And I'd eaten some sort of, I think it was like a raspberry dessert with a raspberry sauce on it. So I thought, I don't know, it's probably from the dessert. I must have slopped it on myself. Anyway, I go into those horrible little toilets, pulled out my pants, and what I saw was just, it was, I won't go into it,
carnage.
But I was shocked.
Do you know what though? I don't even think that looked like a normal period. Like maybe your first periods, because it was just, everywhere.
Anyway. Yeah, it was. And of course I was wearing white shorts. So,
well, I remember at the time because we did go on a swimming holiday and, you know, seeing Kate use a pad for the first time. Just how young I was that I assumed that she had to wear a pad for the rest of her life. I thought the period continued. And that just shows how young you are when these sort of life-changing events happen for you.
Well, I had no idea what was going on. And the funniest part was Mum took me up to the stewardess and I was so mortified. She's like, my daughter's just got her first period. Do you have any pads? So I got some special Malaysian Airlines pads. I remember them being so big and thick. And I just remember not really knowing what was going on because, you know, I just went swimming as normal.
Well, I suppose 11 is quite early to get your period.
Well, with my period, my first period, I remember I got it just before I was meant to be going to a sleepover at a friend's house.
Sorry to interject, but it's always got something to do with swimming or sleeping over because it's, you know, those things that are hard when you have your first period.
But that's the thing. When you do have a sleepover when you're younger and you first get your period, it's mortifying because you're like, well, where do I put the pads?
Or you don't want your friends to see it in your bag.
Yeah. And I don't know if anyone else, but it's always really heavy when you're young. I remember going at a sleepover and literally just, it sounds gross, but just holding onto the pad the whole night because I was mortified if I bled onto my pajamas or onto the sleeping bag. It was just, I couldn't sleep at all from fear.
You've got to get into your first period story.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that exciting. I remember we were sitting around watching Judge Judy with Chad, and I just was like, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. I feel a bit uncomfortable. And I went, and it didn't look anything like yours, Kate.
You're lucky. Yours doesn't sound that traumatic.
Well, it kind of was traumatic because I was meant to be going over to my best friend's, and you guys were coming to Alicia's house, and I remember mum called up and I was like, please don't tell Alicia's mum that's why we're canceling. Of course she did. She rung. She's like, oh, sorry, Amy's got a period. I was like so mortified that,
to be honest,
Alicia would know. And
as a mum, I probably did the exact same thing.
Oh, I would be so on it as well. I mean, I can understand why mum did that now. What about you, Sophie? I know yours involves swimming.
Yeah, well, I think mine was about a year after you got yours. A bit of background info is that Kate and I used to wear the same hairstyle when we were 11 and 12 and basically
dressed... Well, probably right up to like year 11. Yeah. We always wore plaits.
Very sad. But it was really funny because even in photos, like even though we're the same age, Kate was always more developed than me. Like Kate always had boobs and I had nothing.
Look, when you say I had boobs, I think that's a pretty generous
assessment.
Had small boobs.
We used to send Kate a card of a... Amy and I made her a card that was shaped like a bra and sent it to her.
Oh my god!
Called her Pamela. Remember, yeah. Like
they
Pamela
were so mean. I literally, my boobs are probably the same size as they were back then. I was waiting for them to grow in, and that was kind of it. Yeah. But I remember we had those fake eggs, a part of our little kitchen set, and you used to put them in your shirt. It was so mean.
Anyway, we digress from my first period.
Well, do you know what? I'm going to interject. The funniest part of that was Karma was a bitch because mum didn't get you guys a bra until like year 9, so you were punished.
Oh my god, I know. And that's probably where the resentment towards you was coming from, perhaps. Anyway, getting into my first period story, it was a week-long aquatics kind of not camp, but a week-long aquatic session at the end of year 7. And I remember for some reason, I don't know why, year 7 class was watching The Wiggles, but we were watching The Wiggles, and I remember having these intense stabbing pains in my stomach. And we were supposed to be heading to the aquatics thing that afternoon. Anyway, I ran to the bathroom and I realized I had my period, but I didn't know what to do. So I had to end up going swimming anyway, even though I had my period.
So who are the schools that are scheduling all these swimming camps? Like when we went to high school, remember every year it was the swimming carnival?
Oh my gosh, I have such bad memories from that year 8 swimming carnival. Oh. It was so embarrassing because not only you might have your period, but getting into bathers in front of people when you're going through puberty is really tough.
Well, I think also I'm reflecting on when you are young and you do get your first period, the most confusing thing is that you get your period and obviously you're supposed to get it monthly, but because it is so new to you, you don't actually get it on a regular basis. And I remember that year we went away on holiday, some Melbourne road trip, and I was too embarrassed to tell mum that I had my period. So the whole trip, I was just trying to sneak pads that were brought for Kate and Amy. And then some days I would just have nothing. And I remember mum, I ended up crying at the end of the trip telling her that I had my period. And she's like, I was wondering why there were undies filled with blood in the
washing machine. Would her mum have said something about that?
But I just remember being so mortified because you'd already had that difficult discussion of telling them that you had your period.
I remember finding out that that's what had happened years later. And I had this recollection that we'd all had a spa together. And I was like, what the hell?
But it was troubling me the whole trip. Like, you know, when you feel like you've got something hanging over your head. Like, I remember feeling so alone, even too embarrassed to talk about it with you guys. So I mean, I suppose it's good that we are having discussions like this, so maybe young girls feel happier to speak about it because it is such a natural thing.
Yeah, it's so funny to think about the fact that we were all the same age, sisters, tell each other everything but couldn't talk about that. And even to tell your own mum, like I remember I had to go, for some reason I got into this phase where I would go and be like, when I got my period, I would say, mum, I've got my period. So she'd obviously buy pads and stuff, but she was so cute. She gave me this little calendar and we used to mark off when I had my period and I used to like keep it in this special spot.
Why didn't I have a little book? I didn't hear about this.
It wasn't a little book. It was just a little card that had like the dates and you could
actually
pick it
off. This should just be a whole puberty discussion because
no thanks.
I remember mum would buy us this like roll-on deodorant, and I remember it said on on the directions, it's like, don't use after shaving. And I went up to mum and I said, mum, these are for boys. It's talking about shaving, but obviously it meant shaving your underarms.
How old were you then?
Oh, 12, 13.
Sorry, Jeez. Do you guys remember? Sorry, this is so sad and it's embarrassing that we're putting this out there. But I remember lying on the couch with mum and I remember she used to like smell under her arms and then she was like, oh, yes, it's probably time to start using some deodorant.
I remember in terms of deodorant that mum would buy us, yeah, the mum brand deodorant.
Because everyone in year 8 had the cool, the spray on. Like,
yes,
Lynx.
Impulse.
Yeah.
No,
Impulse or whatever Lynx. It is. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember we really wanted Lynx, but I think.
What, no, Impulse.
Oh, sorry. Now Sophie's got Lynx in my head. We really want an Impulse, but I think it was expensive and you just spray it and it goes
so
quickly.
Oh my God. I got the worst locker in year 8 because mine was on the bottom and the girl who was in the middle, she would constantly, I'd be sitting trying to get my stuff out and she'd just grab her Impulse and literally spray it all over her body. And you know when you just be like coughing because that stuff was toxic.
Yeah, it was overpowering.
Well, now that Kate, Sophie and I have shared some of our period stories, we'd actually really love to hear yours. So if you want to go into our Facebook community, which is Outspoken, the podcast community, we're going to put a question up there about when did you first get your period and what actually happened. And we'd love if you guys could share it because, to be honest, it's quite funny to look back on.
Oh, I think it's so funny. And what I love is that there seems to be a lot of common themes around periods and swimming carnivals and sleepovers. So I'd love to hear the interesting ways other people got their first period or even any stories that are funny involving periods. Because I know at high school, it was such a big thing. I don't know who designs the high school dresses, but they're usually very light and not very thick. So I remember
because they're quite cheap to produce.
Oh, and it was just horrible because there was a girl at our school who she was called up the front to write on the board. And the poor girl had a big blood patch on the back of her dress. And someone's like, what's that? I think one of the boys said that. And she's like, oh, I just cut the top of my leg. And looking back, it's just so cruel. I do remember we were talking about this with our boyfriends and we said something about how you would tie your jumper around your waist if you had your period. And I remember Dale was like, is that why?
That reminds me, back in the day at school when I had my period, I would get a pad and, you know, you'd have to put it in your school pocket. And the
pads, at our school, you weren't allowed to carry a bag around.
Yeah. Mm. So you had to put it in your pocket. And I'm sorry, but a pad looks so obvious in
your
pocket.
Yeah, it was like these big, like, because I'd have two and they were just like, poof.
And for some reason, I don't know why, but I was always so paranoid there'd be some sort of instance where someone would be like, turn out your pockets. And I would be mortified that I had pads in there.
Oh.
So I remember I had this
little bag.
This wallet. Pooh Bear wallet that I used to shove them into. And just in case, because then I wouldn't have to reveal what was in my pocket.
I remember at school when you'd have to go and change your pad at recess or lunch. And because you didn't want to be heard, you try and tear the
what is it called? The pad?
No, the Velcro. Not Velcro. What is it? The sticky bit. Yeah. You try and tear it off so lightly so that no one could hear.
Yeah.
And it cracked me up one day.
Moving the toilet roll.
Yeah, it cracked me up because I was in there and I was trying to be so quiet. And then some girl just got into the next cubicle and was just like, just ripped it straight off. I needed that confidence.
It's funny though you talk about how you don't want anyone to see you with a pad or a tampon because I'm still like that at work. So I remember I needed to use one and I had one in my bag and I like put my hand in there and then sort of put my sleeve and like pulled it up my sleeve. How weird is that so many of us have our periods yet we still hide it even when we're adults?
Well, now that you've heard our stories, let's get into answering some of your questions with Maria Harpers.
So Maria, thanks for joining us again.
No problem.
And everyone is so excited to have you back on the show. And we've had so many questions being sent in all about periods. So seems like everyone wants to talk about it. So we might get into our first question. So once you get off the pill, what are some tips to regulating your cycle?
Well, look, for some women, obviously that just happens very quickly and they start getting, you know, a bleed quite quickly and it regulates normally. So initially it's just waiting to see for the first month or so how that falls. And then if it is irregular, there's actually herbs that we can use to try to assist with that becoming regular again. And it also depends how long women have been on the pill for as well. So, you know, some women don't remember, like they've started the pill quite early, and so when they come off it, it's quite a few years down the track, so they don't really remember what their periods were like beforehand naturally and what they were doing. So and of course we always use diet as well to just start to help. But initially it's just to see what is normal for that person, how that falls.
So if you have been on the pill from a very young age, say over 10 years, is it going to take you a longer time to actually get your period back?
Yeah, so it is, different from woman to woman, but it can. And I think more so because we don't know what their normal cycle was like before. They don't always know. So it can. It really just depends on the woman how long that's going to take to get back to normal. I've had women where it's taken ages to get back to normal, up to 6 months, and then others within a month it starts to regulate and get back to normal. So once we see after, 4 weeks or so that things aren't starting, that's when we sort of start some herbs and things to move things along, especially if women want to get pregnant. So that changes things, and depending on how old they are and how quickly we work.
So if someone has gotten off the pill and they haven't been to a naturopath and they're struggling to get their period back, do you think that would be a good option for, for someone to go and come into you or someone else to see what they can do?
Absolutely. Because if it's not normalising quite quickly, I would definitely be looking at trying to do some things to help that. And there's different vitamins as well that we look at, essential fats, is there enough fruit and veg intake in the diet? So we're definitely the people for that. I think naturopaths are really, zoned in on helping, normalise periods.
And this question is kind of along the same lines, but does being on the pill for over 10 years, does it have any effect on your fertility?
I wouldn't be able to say yes, it does. Again, some women have problems, but do we know whether the pill caused that or not? We don't know. I don't think we could definitely say that that's a problem. I think we definitely know that there's risks from being on the pill, and that may change certain things in the body. And could that affect fertility? Not sure. Yeah. Cool. But there's definitely risks from being on the pill, and I don't know that they're always people are always made aware of those risks. For instance, I found a study even showing that inflammatory bowel disease could be one risk for people that are susceptible from being on the pill. There's also the risk of stroke for women. Obviously, women that have got high blood pressure, they're smokers, that means that they're at a higher risk than other women. It's all about the amount of estrogen. So, different pills have got different amounts of estrogen in them. So that's a factor too. And I think if you can get a pill that has the least amount of estrogen to do the job you want, then that's an ideal scenario. And there's also, the pill's also been linked to blood clots. And also, I think we talked last time about the fact that we know it definitely elevates cortisol and copper in a lot of women. And then that copper displaces zinc, which we need for our mood and our skin and our immune system. So, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty scary, because I think we spoke, in the last podcast, we mentioned that so many women are actually unaware of all of those side effects.
Yeah, that's right.
And a lot of women, they do initially go on the pill to help their skin. So if, for example, a woman is wanting to get off the pill after hearing some of these negative side effects, what's one thing they could do, I suppose, to counteract the effects, if their skin does return to how it was previously?
Yeah, look, I definitely, what we do is, because obviously, no one wants to have bad skin or acne, right? Mm. So we try to mitigate, coming off the pill and then going and being back where we started with bad skin. So what we want to do is improve the way the whole body is working, start changing the diet, start looking at under the bonnet to see what sort of markers might not be doing what they should be doing. Like, are there inflammatory markers? Are there other things that we should be addressing to improve, so when that a woman comes off the pill, that we've changed things biochemically to make it less likely that there'll be any acne. I think people don't really understand how hormones work in terms of, it's about being able to clear estrogen properly, and there's two main things to do that, and we have to have the bowels working well, otherwise estrogens get reintroduced into the body instead of coming out, with mm-hmm. bowel movements. So we've got to have our bowels working really well, but it's also about how well our liver detoxification phases work, particularly phase two, has to work really well to help clear the estrogens as well. So, you know, it's a bigger picture than just looking at one component of that. And once we get all of that working really well, then, of course, we have much better skin. It affects things.
And is it sort of a case-to-case basis in terms of, I'm assuming that bad skin can be caused by hormonal imbalances or that type of thing? Is that why it's important to go to a naturopath, because everyone is individual?
Yeah, that's right. Like you can do some things initially, you know, at the start and go, okay, let me improve my diet. Let me reduce processed foods and increase, you know, vegetables and things, right? And then you can go, well, what does that give me? Has that improved things or hasn't it? And then if it hasn't, that's when you need more detailed work looking at those underlying biochemical markers, because we all have susceptibilities and we don't really know what they are. I mean, sometimes we get an idea of what our susceptibilities are by looking at family history. You know, what does mum and dad have? What do grandparents have or our siblings? But other than that, people often don't know some of the drivers that are happening that you can't see. So, you know, the testing really reveals that. And it's really invaluable. And that's why so much of my practice focuses around checking that, because the numbers don't lie. And so it also helps us track progress. So then we've got, you know, a couple of things. We've got symptoms to look at, but we've also got the markers that we can see and go, yep, they're going in the right direction, but we still have to go further. Or actually, no, they're good now. So that's the benefit of doing that, yeah. And again, you know, and skin's not just about the hormones. It might just be food intolerances that we've talked about before that might be causing skin issues, the bowels not doing what they should be doing. So there's sort of different things there, yeah.
Coming up after the break, Maria answers your questions about what food you should avoid during your period and what she thinks about the Marina. But first, a word from today's sponsor.
Modi Body's period proof underwear is an absolute game changer. We have been using them for the past few weeks now and love how confident, comfortable and free we feel in them. Modi Body undies are made from tech-savvy fabrics like bamboo and merino wool and have built-in absorbent and breathable liners. Absolutely no harsh chemicals or plastics are used in the underwear, making it better for your body.
Modi Body is an Australian female-founded company with a focus on empowering women. Its founder, Kirsty, created the brand from her kitchen table when she challenged why the female hygiene market hadn't changed in centuries.
What makes us love Modi Body even more is that it's eco-friendly. The team has set out to break the stigmas around periods while reducing unnecessary landfill. It is estimated that people use 11,000 disposable hygiene products during their menstruating life. These products take 500 to 800 years to break down.
The incredible label also champions body positivity. The line is inclusive of all bodies and showcases real content from customers.
Outspoken listeners can receive 10% off their order at the checkout using the discount code OUTSPOKEN. Terms and conditions do apply.
Now, this question came up quite a lot, so we thought we'd ask it. It is, why do we put on weight and get bloated around our period?
Oh, sure. Well, it's mainly the hormonal fluctuations that occur at that time with, you know, progesterone and estrogen. And it's also, we tend to hold a bit of fluid. So there's some fluid retention at that time. And the bleed itself, you know, there's a big exodus of blood that happens at that time. So it's all these things happening that cause us to feel bloated and feel like we're putting on weight. I think it's a lot of fluid retention, because once your period comes, then that reduces again back to normal or just after. And helping it doing things like making sure you're drinking enough water and unprocessed foods at that time really helps.
That's really funny, because I feel like when a lot of people have their period, they feel like it's an excuse to eat bad food like takeaway or chocolate. What are some things that we should be eating to make us feel better during that time?
So, and I think I always wonder whether that's sort of just a cultural norm, you know, that everybody goes to, and it's easy to get caught in that. So really, there was, you know, there's quite a few studies that show that low fruit and veg intake can negatively affect our period and cause period pain, and fish oil can help as well improve the pain. You know, we also give curcuma, which is the active constituent that's in turmeric, which probably most people have heard of. So we can give that in high doses, during the bleed, and that can really help pain. If you're getting a lot of pain all the time with your periods consistently, then, and you change some of these things, you change the diet, and you do add more fruit and veg, and you lower your processed foods, and you take some fish oil at that period, and even some Chinese herbs are shown to really help. If that's not improving things, then you have to sort of think that there might be an underlying issue like endometriosis, for instance. And so then that should be followed up and checked.
Ah, well, that's what one of our listeners asked. She said that she gets intense period pain on the first 2 days of her period, to the point where she can barely function. Would that be a case of maybe she needs to seek some medical help?
Yeah, I think you know, you can do a couple, because to diagnose endometriosis you have to have a laparoscopy, which is quite an invasive operation. So I think the first thing is to change the diet, to make sure magnesium levels are good, zinc levels, B6, vitamin B6, because they show to really help the hormones. So you make sure those things are good, and then if things are still not improving, then yes, then it's like, okay, that needs to be further investigated. And I do that a lot with women. I don't let them continue on with period pain that's not resolving with normal dietary changes, you know, or might be resolving, but it's still they're very susceptible, you know, the minute they're not completely strict with what they're doing. It needs further investigations for sure. And we shouldn't be tolerating bad period pains. Yeah.
And this is sort of on the same lines, because I feel like growing up we have this misconception that periods should be painful. So just how painful should your period actually be? And when is it time to perhaps go and seek help from a naturopath or doctor if the pain is getting too much, I suppose?
Some women will always feel a little bit that their period's coming, but we get women to the point where they don't even know they're getting a period.
Wow.
Right? I think if you're not getting regular, painless periods, that it requires investigations. It really does. And especially, you know, you want to pick things up early if later on down the track you want to have kids. You know, it's good to sort of know some of these things that might be going on, because that can really save years and years of heartache, because investigations for infertility take a long time. You know, first they, you know, you're trying for a while, for a year or so, you know, you might change diet and you need to give that some time, and then you might change other things. So a lot of times those more invasive investigations aren't done till a lot of time has passed. So I think using your period and kind of going, yeah, we want that to be regular and normal and painless is a good start. And I think starting with, you know, I'm obviously biased because I'm a naturopath, but, you know, I think we're really good people to start with, because what the changes that we make help on so many levels. They help skin, they help mood, they help, you know, we're looking at the body holistically and we're tidying things up. They help energy levels. So I think it's a really good place to start.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about, I suppose, the disadvantages of using the pill, and a few of our listeners have said that they have the Mirena implant, but they're finding, one of our listeners said she's had it for 7 months but she still gets 2 heavy periods a month. Is that normal?
No, I don't think so. 2 heavy periods a month that's not normal, and I would be definitely going back to the doctor, the endocrinologist or gynecologist, to see, you know, what's going on there, because, you know, the Mirena secretes progesterone, And so that basically balances estrogen. So to be getting two heavy periods, I would say, is quite unusual and needs further investigation for sure.
Would you say that the Mirena implant is a better alternative to the pill, in your opinion?
Well, look, it's progesterone and it's more localized. So I think I'm not a fan of any hormonal intervention because it's changing what the body's doing. But, I mean, we have to be realistic, don't we? You know, we want, as women, we want to do we still want to be comfortable and we still want to have a good life and, you know, and have good contraception methods and things. Would I say it's not, I don't think the Mirena, if I might be wrong, but I don't think it's recommended as for younger women as often as the pill is. And I don't know if that's just, I'd have to investigate that further, why that is. I know there's the mini pill that is only progesterone as well, but we're not sure that the mini pill does all the jobs that a normal pill does. So, you know, you've got to check with doctors around that. But certainly I think it's a good thing, you know, it's the estrogen that does probably does more of the, has more of the side effects, but it's also the estrogen that helps in certain areas that, you know, that's why women are going on it. So, yeah it's a bit of a catch-22. I think, yeah, definitely that woman getting two heavy periods is knowing those sorts of things aren't normal. Missing periods is not normal. I always encourage women to make sure, even if they're on the pill, to be getting those bleeds. It's what the body is designed to be doing. So when you're not, I've got a lot of young women that think it's okay not to, that they haven't gotten a period for a while, just naturally, like they start losing their period, but that's not, that's definitely a problem, and it's the body is under a lot of stress and it doesn't have enough resources. So, you know, all those things need investigating if the periods aren't normal.
So kind of along the same lines, one of our listeners says that her period has been missing for 6 months. What are some things that she can try and do to get her period back?
Which is what we were saying. So, yes, definitely, if your period's missing for 6 months, the first couple of things to check is, has any activity changed in terms of exercise? Okay, so it's a frequent thing that can happen to athletes because they're over-exercising. So the body's under more stress and it's not, and so they lose the period. So the first thing is to look at those things. So more nutrients might be required. Particularly or if they're losing a lot of weight, so they're going underweight. So then, you know, obviously women that are anorexic, so that's the extreme of that, lose their period. So checking those things to make sure, you know, healthy BMI is maintained, so healthy weight is maintained. Also making sure that there's not been a significant drop in protein or good fats and essential fats, because that will also, you know, stop a period. So, you know, the body just goes, we don't need to do that job. We need these resources and nutrients for other things, so we'll just stop the period. And that's literally what happens. So I think checking those things is the first thing. To see, because normally that's where the problems are.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Which is a bit different, right, to heavy, painful periods where we're going, really we want a high vegetable intake and probably a lower fat intake, because there's a lot of bad fats in processed foods. You know, whereas for, amenorrhea, where the period's missing, is kind of a different thing that we're looking at.
Someone has also asked, is blood clotting and dizziness normal, or what does that mean when you get that, when you have your period?
Yeah, that's so again, I think blood clotting sort of has, we have to look at, you know, is that an ongoing issue? Then we might want to check how well the body's detoxifying. We use herbs that can really help change that, but we always start with diet, right? Because even with herbs, we don't want to just be reliant on those. But some women are more susceptible to this. So changing diet can really help that and herbs. Now, with dizziness and headaches, the likely culprit there, which is so common and women don't realise, is when we have a bleed, we're losing iron, right? And so if we've got a female, you know, females that are women that are already borderline low in iron, what happens is they get their period, and for from then to, you know, at least a week after the bleed, there's been such a loss in iron that low iron and even anemia for some women they go into causes headaches, dizziness, fatigue. So that's where the problems are. And it's not unusual when I'm checking people's iron levels to want to know where in the cycle they are, because if iron is checked just before the period, that's the highest amount of iron a woman's going to have. And if it's checked just after the bleed, that's the lowest amount of iron a woman's going to have. And comparing those so that we know how to improve that ongoingly is really important, because then we sort of go, well, you might not need iron during the month, but you just might need it when you're having your bleed. Right. Okay. Or you might need to have more red meat during that, during you know the bleed. So they're really good strategies, and it does resolve the dizziness, headaches and fatigue.
That's great. If you're vegetarian, would you say that taking a sort of either a liquid iron supplement or a tablet would be a good idea as well if you are getting a bit dizzy around your period?
Yeah, so for vegans and vegetarians, I like to, even though we know, yes, obviously red meat has got the highest source of iron and they're not eating that, I still like to check the individual, because some women, you know, when I was a vegetarian vegan, I never had a problem with my iron levels, which is, you know, a little bit, you know, not as usual. So we still want to check the individual to go, is this your problem? You know, is this where that's a problem? So I do the same checks for vegans and vegetarians. But, yes, they normally, you know, if they are susceptible, yes, we get I get them to take iron. So they might take iron all the way through the month, but at the bleed I get them to double the iron that they take. Okay, and then that really helps. Because it's not only, it's iron affects our mood. So we can feel quite down and depressed when we're low in iron.
Yeah, and that's so interesting, because I suppose sometimes people feel a bit down and depressed when they've got their period, so maybe it is just the fact that they're low in iron.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why I love, you know, I love having some of these measures that are really scientifically proven, because then it's very easy for us to work with, and it's not our head kind of going, oh, it's just me, I'm just grumpy at that time of the month, you know. It's nicer to know, well, yeah, my iron's low.
And isn't it true that, we were discussing this yesterday, but isn't it true that you're not really meant to experience moodiness? You know how people have got, oh, you know, they say they turn into a different person when they've got their period. Is that something that should be sort of alarm bells going if that happens to you?
Oh, well, look, I don't, not necessarily alarm bells, but obviously someone that is susceptible to mood being up and down, you know, the last thing that they want is to have a week or even 2 weeks of every month where their mood is even worse, you know. That's not a very nice way to live. And, you know, for sure, you want to, I think moodiness generally, you know, we want to get that biochem right, so you're not dealing with that on top of your own ability to deal with things from a psychological perspective, right? Because there's always stresses. As long as humans are going to be alive, that's going to be happening. So it's nice if that's under control. And, yeah, I think it's things that can be resolved, and it's things that we really help people with, and I don't think that is addressed medically at all. It's not considered nor addressed unless it's a sort of ongoing problem. And yeah, again, I'm biased, but I think diet and lifestyle stuff, nutrients and herbs should be the first thing that we're looking at to resolve, because it just helps us, our well-being overall generally, and helps prevent things in the future too.
Are there dangers associated with using tampons and pads, because I'm assuming they've got chemicals in them?
Yeah, and I think there's been links to deaths using tampons, and you know, there's chemicals in there, and it's also related to women keeping the tampons in for too long. But you can move to organic cotton tampons, which are better. You can do things like when you're home, not use tampons, use pads instead. And these new eco-friendly things that are out now, cups and different undies that can be used. I think there's little strategies you can do so that, it's healthier and safer.
So one listener wanted to know, if she chooses not to have kids, is it okay for her to stay on the pill until she reaches menopause?
Well, look, you know, you can, of course, you know, and doctors, and they'll leave you on the pill forever. There's no problem medically with that. I think it goes back to looking at the risks and going, well, what does my body do when I'm on the pill? Is my cortisol affected? Is my copper affected? Is zinc negatively affected? Am I prepared to be susceptible to some of these risks that are out there that we talked about before, and am I susceptible? Because obviously if you're a smoker, and even it was smokers, people with women with hypertension, which is high blood pressure, and women that get migraines with aura have a higher risk of stroke from the pill. So it's sort of going, what am I prepared to do and what am I not prepared to risk is really the call that all women have to make on that. And how might it be affecting if women are really, really unwell, you know, lots of mood problems, lots of fatigue problems, and they're not resolving with some of the first line steps that we do. I often ask them to reconsider some of these things, and the pill's one of them, to go, well, you know, should we have a period of time off it just to see that there might be something that it's doing that's not working for you.
That's some really good advice. Our last question is period pain linked to stress and anxiety at all? Because this listener, she said she's had the Mirena in for about a year and she hasn't had any pain, but she's had a really stressful week at work and she's had the period pain return.
Okay. Well, look, stress might be a trigger. I mean, we blame stress for everything, right? Because I do think it affects a lot of things in the body. And we know that, you know, the sympathetic nervous system gets affected when we're stressed, and our cortisol levels. So there is, you know, touchy-feely things that stress does that we know of. And it has been shown that it might trigger prostaglandins, which are these are compounds that are involved in sort of modulating our inflammatory markers. They also contribute to the uterine tension.
Oh, yeah.
So, and contracting and relaxing the smooth muscles. So that's sort of how stress could be related and could just push you over the edge to then have pain and problems. So, yeah.
Oh, well,
it's interesting how it works, yeah.
Oh, definitely. Well, thank you so much for answering all the questions. It's been so insightful. So really appreciate your time.
Problem.
If people do want to find out more, we'll obviously leave all the links to Natural Health Medicine in our show notes. But this is a national podcast. Are people able to get you on Zoom as well, or is it just Adelaide-based people?
No, we do worldwide, actually. We've got some clients overseas too. So yeah, no problem at all.
Well, thank you so much for listening to our special episode on periods. If you did enjoy it, we'd love if you could leave us a review on the Apple podcast, because it really does help promote our podcast to others.
And we've got an exciting competition for outspoken listeners. You can head to our Instagram and enter a competition to win a $100 voucher from Modibody.
And our Instagram address is outspoken_the_podcast. And a big thank you again to Maria Harpus from Natural Health Medicine for joining us today. If you do want to find out more about Maria and what she does, go onto Instagram and follow natural_health_medicine on Instagram. We've also left all her details below if you do want to contact her. So they're in the show notes.